this message I got from one of my favorite devotional books. It's just a pamphlet thing that I get every month, every 3 months. And the first part, it comes in five parts. I got three parts all together, and then I found the other two parts, and they just seem to go together. So, and so I'm going to read to you a little bit from 1 Corinthians chapter 9. You can just listen if you want to, or you can go. Mine probably says it a little bit different than yours. So, and this is all something that reminds me very strongly of our pastor and friend, Rick. So the whole message, I think, reminds me of him. So if I, it's verse 17 through 24, I think. If I were volunteering my services of my own free will, then the Lord would give me a special reward. But that's not the situation. For God has picked me out and given me this sacred trust, and I have no choice. Under this circumstance, what is my pay? It is a special joy I get from preaching the good news without expense to anyone, never demanding my rights. And this has a real advantage. I'm not bound to obey anyone just because he pays my salary, yet I have freely and happily become a servant of any and all so that I can win them to Christ. When I'm with the Jews, I seem as one of them so that they will listen to the gospel and I can win them to Christ. When I'm with the Gentiles who follow Jewish customs and ceremonies, I don't argue, even though I don't agree, because I want to help them. When I'm with the heathen, I agree with them as much as I can, except, of course, that I must always do what is right as a Christian. And so, by agreeing, I can win their confidence and help them too. When I'm with those whose consciences bother them easily, I don't act as though I know it all, and I don't say they're foolish. The result is that they are willing to let me help them. Yes, whatever a person is like, I try to find common ground with him. Remember that, common ground. I try to find common ground with him so that he will let me tell him about Christ and let Christ save him. I do this to get the gospel to them and also for the blessing I myself receive when I see them come to Christ. So that just reminded me a whole lot of Pastor Rick. So so the first part is, and it's all, the title of each of these three first parts is all finding common ground. And so it says, I try to find common ground with everyone, 1 Corinthians 9:22. So to influence someone, you must first connect with them. And to do that, you must look for common ground. Paul writes, I try to find common ground with everyone, doing everything I can to save some. In the message, Eugene Peterson paraphrases Paul's words. Even though I'm free of the demands and expectations of everyone, I have voluntarily become a servant to any and all in order to reach a wide range of people, religious people, non-religious, meticulous moralists, loose-living immoralists, the defeated, the demoralized, whoever. I didn't take on their way of life. I kept my bearings in Christ. But I entered their world and tried to experience things from their point of view. I've become just about every sort of servant there is in my attempts to lead those I meet into a God-saved life. I did all this because of the message. I didn't just want to talk about it. I wanted to be in on it. Note the words, I entered their world and tried to experience things from their point of view. When it came to preaching the truth, Paul wouldn't yield an inch. But when it came to reaching and influencing people for Christ, he tried to remove every roadblock between them and Christ. And you must be willing to do the same. People don't care. This is my favorite saying. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And that's the truth, too. You can preach to them all you want, but they don't want to hear it, really. They want to know how much you love them. That's why you must approach them heart first, not head first. Before someone can receive the truth that you have to share, they must be convinced that you love and care for them. And that means finding common ground. So that's number one. And then here's number two. This is titled, besides finding common ground, this is titled, I have voluntarily become a servant to all. That's in 1 Corinthians 9:19. So whether you're applying for a job, trying to win someone to Christ, counseling and advising, or correcting someone's behavior, to be effective, you must look for common ground. Let's look at some of the qualities that calls for. And number one is availability. Paul writes, I have voluntarily become a servant to all, to reach a wide range of people. Establishing areas of common interest takes time. It also takes effort. It's been reported that today, a typical business executive has an on-the-job attention span of 6 minutes. That's pathetic. That's pathetic. Where am I? In 6 minutes, a person can hardly get his or her feet on the ground, much less find common ground. Identifying areas you can agree on calls for empathy. That's the second thing. And I know that empathy means experience and feeling how somebody else feels, how another person feels. So identifying areas you can agree on calls for empathy and a willingness to listen to what the other person has to say. In her book, How to Talk So People Listen, Sonia Hamlin reports that most people find this challenging because of the me first factor. She writes, listening requires giving up our favorite human pastime, which is involvement in ourselves and our own self-interest. It's our primary, entirely human focus, and it's where our motivation to do anything comes from. With this as a base, can you see what a problem is created when we're asked to listen to someone else? So what's the solution? First of all, it's essential to acknowledge and answer two of the listener's instinctive unspoken questions, which are, why should I listen to you? What's in it for me if I let you in? Anytime you're willing to listen to people and figure out how what you're offering meets their needs, you are halfway toward your goal of finding common ground. So that's number two. And number three is finding common ground. And the title is, I tried to experience things from their point of view. 1 Corinthians 9:22. To establish common ground, you must be adaptable. Thomas Aquinas said, to convert somebody, go and take them by the hand and guide them. You must be willing to move from where you are to where they are, to adapt and try to see things from their point of view. Anytime you're aware of distance between you and the person you're trying to reach, it's good to search for something in your own background and experience that relates to theirs. Don't start the process by telling them all about yourself. Begin by moving to where they are and trying to see things from their perspective. Adapt to them. Don't think they should adapt to you. Instead of telling people how you feel, find out how they feel. Instead of telling them what you see, discover how they see things. Instead of trying to tell them what you want, discover what they want. Abraham Lincoln said, "When I'm getting ready to reason with a man, I spend one-third of my time thinking about myself and what I'm going to say, and two-thirds about him and what he's going to say." The truth is, you can't take someone on a journey unless you're willing to start where they are. Only then can you truly connect and lead them to where you want to take them. You can know a lot about a person and still not understand them. More information isn't always the answer. The Bible says, "Deep calls to deep." That's in Psalms 42, verse 7. And to really understand people, you must move beyond head knowledge and learn to speak the knowledge of the heart. So that's finding common ground. I think it's something that we need to hear over and over again, because we always present ourselves and, you know, we just want to help them, and we want to do it, you know, we want to tell them all that we know about how to help them, you know. So we really have to go where they're at. So number four is, this was a completely different page and thing, but it just seemed to go together. These things go together. So it comes from Matthew 5, verse 41. It says, "If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. How to deal with difficult people. That's the title. How to deal with difficult people. Jesus said, if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. Roman soldiers were permitted to force a Jew to carry a burden 1 mile for them. They treated Jews as tools to be used. However, in those days, a Roman soldier was likely to be very young, a stranger in the city, poor, and deeply resented by the locals. So what would you do in that situation? Jesus invites you to take the high road. When you carry someone's burdens, when you carry someone's burden and finish the first mile, say, 'You look tired. Can I help you some more? Can I carry a burden another mile?'" Can you imagine doing that? But it's what you're called to do. Often, when someone takes advantage of you, you want to think of them as unlikable instead of a real person with their own story. It's said that a friend offered to introduce English essayist Charles Lamb to a man whom Lamb had disliked for a long time. "Don't make me meet him," Lamb said. "I want to go on hating him, and I can't do that to a man I know." Understand this. You can give the gift of empathy. Remember, that's coming right down to where they are. Remember, Jesus did that. He came right down to where we are to understand what we go through and everything. Understand this. You can give the gift of empathy. You can remember that the person you don't like is also a human being. You can put yourself in his place. You can take the time to imagine how he feels, what he has been through, and how life has treated him. When you do that, your problem becomes an opportunity to practice the Christ life. Isn't that what you want? Isn't that what you signed up for in the first place? And the fifth one is what it really means to love someone. So, and the title is, As We Live in God, Our Love Grows More Perfect. That's in 1 John 4:17. What it means to love someone. In today's culture, the word love means different things to different people. You can love your husband or wife, your country, your dog, your new cell phone, and your car, but you don't love your husband or wife the same way you love your cell phone or your car, right? So the television and tabloid kind of love, where you fall in and out of love at the drop of a hat, is not real love. It's selfishness and immaturity. The Bible word agape, you probably all know what that means, that's God's love. It's an unconditional commitment to love that's rooted in an unchanging decision. It always gives and doesn't change whether the love is returned or not. It's a decision of your heart to seek the other person's highest good, no matter how they may respond, right? When, you know, it's hard to really love someone when they really can't stand you, you know, but that's what God says to do. That's what God says to do. And we need to do it, you know. And we need to forgive when, you know, when they do things to us that really hurt. So when the King James Bible translators came upon the Greek word agape, in addition to using the English word love to translate it, they often chose the word charity. This was meant to reinforce the idea that love is a selfless, unconditional, giving love. And as such, it directs kindness, respect, and loyalty towards the loved one. God is love, and all who live in love live in God, and God lives in them. And as we live in God, our love grows more perfect. What causes us to stand out from the world isn't our words, but our love for one another. And you can feel that in this church. You can just, I mean, it's just like real thick love in this church, I think. Yeah. So when we can overcome our differences, when we can cross lines of denomination, race, and culture, and truly love one another, the world is drawn to Christ, and it pays attention to what we say. So that's the message, but I want to read to you the rest of 1 Corinthians chapter 9, starting with verse 24. So, in a race, everyone runs, but only one person gets first prize. So run your race to win. To win the contest, you must deny yourselves many things that would keep you from doing your best. An athlete goes to all this trouble just to win a blue ribbon or a silver cup. But we do it for a heavenly reward that never disappears. So I run straight to the goal with purpose in every step. I fight to win. I'm not just shadow boxing or playing around here. Like an athlete, I punish my body, treating it roughly, training it to do what it should, not what it wants to. Otherwise, I fear that after enlisting others for the race, I myself might be declared unfit in order to stand aside. So that's what I have for you today. Thank you.